Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Locked On Spartans. It is Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. I'm your host, Will Hunter. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's episode. I just realized, like, just now, that I missed the one-year anniversary of this show launching. It was, I believe, October 1st of last season, last year. Somewhere around there, beginning of October last year, and I totally forgot to mention it. It's kind of crazy how fast time flies with these sorts of things. I remember sitting down to record the two-minute-long teaser show after I had gotten the job, and I had done some podcasting stuff before, a little teeny bit of like guest hosting with radio, sports radio shows here and there, but nothing like hosting a daily show dedicated to Michigan State sports. And I sat down to do like the 2 minute little teaser clip to upload, and I just had no idea what to do. Like, I hit record and just sat there and was like, now what? It was the weirdest thing ever, getting used to talking to myself, talking to a microphone, imagining like I'm talking to you, but talking in a room by myself. And it wasn't very good. Definitely straight up was bad. Shows were not good. Appreciate you, all of you who have stuck around, who have been there since the beginning. It's not many of you. Weren't many listeners out of the jump. Certainly a lot more now, but much appreciation from me to all of you who have stuck around, who've been around the show for a while, contribute to the show in a number of different ways, and really new listeners too. I appreciate everyone who gives the show a shot, tells people about it, and helps spread the good word of Locked On Spartans. So thanks so much. I meant to do that on the 1 year anniversary of the show, but I just forgot to do it. It just went right past me though. Done like 240 episodes, something crazy like that. It blows my mind. All right, on today's show, got a bunch of mailbag questions I'm going to answer for you. We'll talk about some basketball stuff. Talk a little bit about Michigan State picking up a recruit in football. Not a ton of time on that. And then just some other mailbag things as well. Kind of a smorgasbord episode. Tomorrow, we're going to do a hockey preview. Full show dedicated to hockey. The Michigan State hockey team. And then we'll see what happens for Friday. But mailbag for today. Send it out on Twitter. At @Will_Hunter, 1L2_. So you can always send me questions there. You can always email me, LockedOnSpartans@gmail.com as well. All right, let's get things started by talking about this football recruit. Okay, so after, tough couple of weeks for Michigan State for sure. In the football arena, Michigan State picks up a nice recruiting win, getting Jordan Simmons, a running back out of Georgia, to commit to them. He is, 580th, somewhere in there. Yeah, 586 in the 24/7 sports composite rankings, a pretty high-ish three-star recruit who's got just a boatload of offers, half the SEC has offered. Here, I'll pull up some more stuff. Arkansas, Boston College, Florida, Florida State, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisville, LSU, Maryland, Michigan, Mississippi State, Nebraska, Ole Miss, Oregon, Pittsburgh, and South Carolina. Oh, Virginia Tech and West Virginia as well. So, pretty decent offer list there. I always enjoy, now that I sort of work within the media sphere of Michigan State, I sent out a tweet like, oh, it's a good pickup for Michigan State, yada, 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 had offers from Georgia, whatever. And then just a bunch of Michigan fans just got in my mentions and were just doing anything they could to tell me how none of these offers that this person had were legit offers, not real offers. And he only went to Michigan State because they were the only school that would take him. Like, that was enjoyable. I'm just going to say this flatly. If you are someone who is that into college football recruiting and isn't paid professionally, like to do that. Like if you're someone who's just as a hobby, as an obsession with your college football program, will search out a player after he commits to your rival school and make sure you can tell everyone that you can find how this is not actually a good recruit, not a good win for Michigan State, for your rival's recruiting. You are flatly and bluntly a huge loser. Huge loser, if that is your status. I don't, you know, maybe someone in this audience does that, and if you do, I'm sorry for calling you a loser, but it's, you know, mirror check time. You can definitely care about recruiting. That's totally fine. You can follow it. You can even follow it to the point where you know a bunch of people, you know where visits are happening, who's thinking about what. You're super into this kind of stuff. I get that. It's not my thing. It's not everyone's thing. But if you're doing that and you're just sort of like, yeah, I'm really involved in the recruiting community, I really like it as a hobby, that's fine. But if you're someone who is going around searching out conflicts so you can flex your recruiting muscles, it's time to take a good hard look in the mirror. Like, that is one of my least favorite people. It's almost as bad as the person who tweets at recruits. If you are someone who tweets at recruits, stop doing that. Unless it's like the only acceptable tweet at a recruit is when they announce that they're going to a different school, or they announce that they're going to Michigan State and you say, congrats, welcome to Michigan State. Or you say, wish you would have been a Spartan. Good luck at Illinois or whatever. Something like that. That's the only acceptable time and situation to tweet at a recruit. Nothing else. That's a hard and fast rule there. Do not tweet at recruits. I'm glad I didn't think this would turn into a me getting pet peeves as it relates to college football recruiting out there, but that's what we're doing right now. So don't tweet at recruits and don't start fights with people on Twitter randomly just so you can try to flex your recruiting knowledge, because nobody cares. Nobody cares at all. But yeah, Michigan State picks up Jordan Simmons, pretty well-regarded recruit, has a just, no matter what way you spin it, a really impressive list of offers. And I think, you know, the fact that he could come to Michigan State and probably slot immediately into a decent role in the backfield was something that drew him here, as opposed to a school like Oregon or Florida, Nebraska, Michigan, you know, more programs with better recruiting success, we'll say it that way, than Michigan State. You know, if you go through those schools' classes, they all have running backs, and multiple schools take multiple running backs all the time. But, you know, if you're going in with multiple running backs who are ranked higher than you, some significantly higher than you, they're like, yeah, you know, we got a spot for you, but it's going to be a grind, yada, yada, yada. Whereas Michigan State, you know, he gets to come in and know that he can have a real chance to get 15 to 20 carries as a true freshman. And even with the emergence of Elijah Collins, be a really dynamic sort of duo there, because he's a speed guy, Jordan Simmons. I read that he ran somewhere in the 4.3s at Michigan State's camp. That's hand time. So, you know, something like a 4.5-ish, which is still really fast for a high school kid. I know we hear like 4.5 and we're like, that's not fast. Like, no, that's ridiculously fast for a 17-year-old. He's going to get faster too. So he's a speed guy, whereas Collins, you know, does some different things. And even Anthony Williams is more of a lateral quickness, good hands type player than a straight line speed. So he could be someone that adds a different speed dimension to Michigan State and does fit in well, and I think will be able to come in so long as he ends up at Michigan State and be someone who can contribute perhaps right away. And I think he liked the idea of that at Michigan State, as opposed to somewhere like Georgia, where he's going into a class with a 5-star running back, probably another 4-star running back, and he's the, you know, still a decently regarded recruit, but he is number 6 or 7 on the depth chart first day he steps on the field in Athens. And that's, you know, that whole recruiting crap, the over-signing, the gray shirting, the non-committable offers, which aren't actual offers. Either you have an offer or you don't have an offer. Non-committable offers, that in my book is not an offer. That doesn't exist. So all that recruiting crap that you have to deal with, and it happens a lot in the SEC, and it's starting to happen more in other places too. I see the appeal of not wanting to deal with any of that and just knowing I'm going to go to a good program, have a really good shot at getting playing time, and it's a program that's had some success and put some really good running backs into the NFL. Even, you know, over the last, 12 years, there's been four of them, something like that. It's not a bad place to go be a college running back, certainly. So I think there's a lot of appeal to Michigan State, and that's kind of why Simmons ended up there, as well as some good access to early playing time at a program that has some prestige to it. So, all right, that went longer than I thought it was. We'll take a break here. When we get back, we'll hit those mailbag questions, including who will be the leader of Michigan State's number two unit on basketball court. That's a good one. So we'll do that here in just a second. All right, let's jump into some mailbag questions here. I know I said I was going to do less football this week, but there are some football questions that I will get to here. And like I said, tomorrow is an exclusive hockey show. And then we will do some other fun non-football stuff on Friday before kind of easing back into it next week. So mailbag questions for now. We'll see where this sort of takes us here in the next few minutes. And then if we need to figure something else out, we'll figure something else out. But I think we'll be able to keep on with the mailbag stuff for the rest of the show. All right. Again, at @will_Hunter on Twitter, 1L2_ LockedOnSpartans@gmail.com. Anytime you want to send over a question, I don't have to have a mailbag request out. If you want to send in a question, I'll usually try to get to it. Our first question is from, Robert Stefanek, at Robert Stefanek on Twitter. He says, if D'Antonio doesn't retire, what are the chances he looks at what Ed Orgeron has done with Joe Brady and finally makes meaningful changes to the offensive staff? So just a quick background, if you don't know, haven't been super locked into college football nationally or what LSU has done. Basically, LSU has been one of the worst passing offenses forever. Just haven't been good at it, despite having players like Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham Jr., and you can just kind of go on and down the list, all the talent they've gone through there, and they've really struggled to put together productive offenses. And so Ed Orgeron, who's a old school guy who wants to put hands in the dirt and just crash heads into each other, and whoever is meaner and tougher and punches harder is going to win this sucker. That's his sort of style of football. He is a swamp monster and a wonderful man who drinks like 9 Red Bulls a day. He has sort of realized that maybe what they were trying to get done there at LSU wasn't working so well, so he hired a guy by the name of Joe Brady. Joe Brady was a graduate assistant with Penn State under Moorhead, Joe Moorhead, when they were just lighting it up and having great offenses, and then he was hired by Sean Payton, who was impressed by some of the work he was doing at Penn State, to be an offensive analyst. Is he the offensive analyst or assistant? I think it's offensive analyst for the New Orleans Saints, and you know, helped in New Orleans to do some creative things and bring some good ideas there. And then Brady went to LSU with the Saints coaches to talk with Orgeron and the coaches there. You know, the exchanging of ideas that happens. And Orgeron was really impressed with him and hired Joe Brady to be their passing game coordinator. And it has made an absolute world of difference. Joe Brady is one of these hot up-and-coming names, appears to be incredibly smart and gifted when it comes to calling offense. And Joe Burrow's the LSU quarterback, is a Heisman finalist. LSU's passing for 400 freaking yards a game and absolutely destroying teams and looks to be a real national contender. Complete departure of what they've been and are just running a next level scheme that is, you know, matching what Oklahoma has done over the years, and it's just really impressive. So that's the full background. An older, stubborn coach changing his ways, hiring somebody completely out of left field and totally overhauling what they do on offense. No. No, Mark D'Antonio isn't gonna do that. Mark D'Antonio will make Don Treadwell the offensive coordinator. I honestly don't I don't know. So the offensive assistants are on 1 year rolling contracts. If you forget that, which if we're reading into that, that means if it doesn't go well, if it kind of continues down this path, they're all going to be gone. I could really see some late season improvement, put up a nice number on Maryland, put up a nice number on Rutgers, do okay against Michigan, score some points against Illinois, score 28 in the bowl game, and everything is hunky-dory, and everyone's coming back next year to sort of run it back. I could really see that if D'Antonio is indeed intent on sticking around. I don't think it's going to take much production for him to keep his guys in that spot. I think things would really have to bottom out before he made the decision to fire the entire offensive staff. He's time and time and time again proven, like, that's his thing, loyalty, his friends, keeping the people close to him close. That's his move. That's his mode. And I don't think there's a chance in hell that Mark D'Antonio, at his age, his career point, has any interest in starting completely over with an all-new offensive staff. I think if I think if this would have happened like 3 years ago, he would have done that. But he's at a point in his career where he's just not willing to do that, not interested in doing that. And it's why he didn't do it last season, sort of a last-ditch effort to shuffle the deck chairs. And I don't think there's a chance in hell that he does it and sticks around and hires a new offensive staff to do a major overhaul and upgrade from what they've got going on right now. All right, next question here. Let me check my time. Is from at bhiggins42 on Twitter, Chuck U. Farley, which if you flip some letters in there, is not a very nice thing to say to a person named Charlie. How many JUCO offensive linemen do we need to fix this problem? I actually think the freshmen on the roster have a decent chance of really solidifying the line. I know there's a lot of panic over the next couple of seasons with Michigan State football. But you have some really talented true freshmen on that offensive line that are getting some time here, and I think the smart thing would be to end up redshirting them. And yeah, it hasn't, the development has seemingly stopped in terms of Michigan State offensive line. But in 2 years, who knows, there could be a new staff in there. There could be a new offensive line coach. There could be different things going on. I think there's enough talent in that this class that came in between Devontae Dobbs, obviously, Nick Samak, J.D. Duplain, Spencer Brown. They could form a pretty good group right there. And then, you know, if two of those guys hit, two are good players, another's a replacement-level player that can start, you know, you're on your way to having a decent offensive line. And there's a couple of guys on the line that are up underclassmen this year that'll be back in next year. You know, Luke Campbell is probably their most steady offensive lineman right now. If I had to choose anyone from the group, you know, Campbell does a good job. Matt Allen at times is a good player as well. They're both juniors, so they'll be in next year. You know, if you can get those guys and a couple of those freshmen as redshirt freshmen or true sophomores are able to step in bigger roles, you know, maybe Matt Carrick or Jacob Isaiah or young guys could make a jump. You know, there is a path to a decent offensive line next season, sort of built around a couple of veterans and really that next group. But it's hard to have much confidence in it with what the development overall has been the last 4 or 5 years with that group. JUCO's never been a route that D'Antonio really likes to go. He's brought in a couple people. Wouldn't be a terrible idea. They're losing a good amount of transfers this season. That is opening up scholarship spots for next season that are late in the recruiting process, unexpected. You know, Michigan State's going to finish out its class, and maybe a couple of those guys end up being JUCO players that are more plug-and-play than your typical, you know, freshman class. So, and that all, you know, it depends on how the season ends and what is going on with the coaching situation at season's end, because they could bring somebody in who's really interested in bringing in JUCO players And that, you know, it could be really drastically different this time next season. We just don't know. But, yeah, I wouldn't be against bringing in JUCO offensive linemen. But I do think there is a spot where, you know, there's some young talent there, the offensive line. It's a good class they brought in 2019 in terms of linemen. And if they can get some guys to pan out, and if Devontae Dobbs can be an all-Big Ten type offensive lineman, you might have something there. Buck at MSU Frankly asks, why do I keep doing this to myself? Good question. I don't know. You're a masochist. You like pain. You just enjoy the sadness. Misery loves company. I don't know. I mean, it's okay. It's not that bad, really. Like, in the grand scheme of problems, we're doing okay. If our biggest problems revolve around Michigan State only scoring 7 points against good teams, or I guess zero against Wisconsin. Let's see here. Who do we go? Matt Zahn at Zahner _ asks, what's your thoughts on MSU soccer's decline over the season so far? Pretty big fall from last season's finish. I got to be honest, I watched a half of Michigan State soccer this year. Yes. More than I would have guessed coming into the season. They finished the season awesome last year in the tournament, had that great run. Seemingly aren't doing so well this year. I watched them, I think, lose to Penn State at home. I watched the first half. Wasn't going well. Yeah, I have no idea. I think soccer, any soccer that is tangentially related to me at this point is just going down the can. So I'll take the blame on this one. The U.S. men's national team is absolutely terrible. Everton is in the relegation zone in the Premier League, and Michigan State soccer is slumping after having such a great finish last season. That's my fault. I'm sorry. If you are in my corner when it comes to soccer, it's just not going well right now. We are going to be jumping on the, Inter-Miami bandwagon, though, once they get going in MLS, so we can have an MLS team. If you want to do that with me, we'll drag down another soccer franchise with Inter-Miami once they get playing next MLS season. So, yeah, no idea what's going on with the decline. No idea. It's college soccer. I don't see a ton of it. Sometimes I'll catch it on BTN. Like I said, I saw half. So I'm just not your guy, but I will accept blame for another soccer team that I root for doing poorly. All right. I teased about some basketball stuff. I will do it next. I will also ask or answer who is the most annoying Matt. Although I think I've answered that like 10 times so far. So we'll do that here in just a minute. Okay, let's see here. What other? I'm just scrolling through some questions right now. One more football one, and then we'll switch to some other stuff. It's from JM Roback at JRoback3 on Twitter. What are the actual odds D'Antonio is not our head coach next season? I would say, if I'm pegging this as like actual, it's tough because I feel like I have some good information that I do trust, and the information that I do trust, it's correlating with other information from completely wildly different sources, people who know people over here and people who know people in this aspect and just other things that are going around. I feel confident saying that this will be D'Antonio's last season, like 60-40, yes, that it's his last season is kind of where I would be the last spot that I'm like, yeah, that's like really great. Now, like, I don't know, if I'm setting a line, right, I'll say it that way. If I'm setting a line, I'm basing it around 60-40 because I can't go something like 90-10 and take that kind of risk if I'm setting a betting line here that the other side comes in because those are massive odds against it. I think the chances that it happens are much higher than a lot of people think. I think the chances that it happened are much higher than a lot of people would like to believe. I don't think it's 100%. I know I said a couple days ago that I feel like I was 100% buying the rumors that this would be his last season. That's just kind of where I'm at in terms of feeling around things. If I actually look at it and consider the sources and consider all the information and where everything's at right now, you know, I would never peg it at 100%. That would not be smart of me to do. And I would feel that it's closer to like 80-20. But again, if I'm setting a line, a gambling line, I'm setting it closer to 60-40, just because I still think, you know, there's a lot to happen this season. I think right now it's like 80-20, but by season's end, it could be closer to 50-50. It could be back that he is 100% returning. It's tough to really know because I've heard that he's 100% going to be calling it this year and considered last year. I've heard that if things go down the tube, that he would not want to leave, you know, if they go 6-7 or something this year, he wouldn't want to leave the program in that sort of spot. You know, wouldn't want to feel like he's sort of, well, you guys stink now, see ya. Like that sort of like quitting on him once things got tough and would want to get it back to a respectable place. But that's tough too, because if you're, you know, feeling like it's time to retire, wanting to retire, and worried about getting stuck in a cycle where like, all right, I'm not going to leave because we went 5-7 or 6-7 or whatever. I'm not going to leave because I don't want to bail. I'm going to stick it out. We're going to go and rebound next year. Like, what happens if that happens again? If you go 5-7, you take another step back. Do you leave then? Are you continuing to hurt the legacy? Are you continuing to go through crappy days at work, not having a good time when you could be retired, enjoying your multi-millions of dollars, spending time with your family, going on vacations, and all sorts of stuff? So that's tough to know. It's early. I think it's a fluid situation, but I think there's a very strong, heavy lean towards his retirement at this point, from what I've heard. Feel free to let me know at @will_hunter1l2_. Love talking to people about things like that if you want to send some information my way. All right, let's move to another question here from Peach James at Peach James, Peach at Spartan Stadium, which will switch to Peach at the Breslin probably soon. A good fan of MSU sports, good follow on Twitter as well, so follow him for sure. Who emerges as the leader of MSU's second unit? That's an interesting question, because so we're going starters here. It's tough with Langford's health. We're thinking it's going to be okay. All the indications are it's going to be all right. But Izzo did say, you know, he's a little worried about Arnes and Langford. And Langford's back to resuming activities, but maybe there might be a little delay. They work him back in, and maybe he is someone who kind of is a second unit type player in the early going, just because trying to get back in the swing of things. But let's go with this sort of mid-year expectation starting lineup of Cassius, Langford, Aaron Henry, Tillman at the five, and then, gosh, I guess it's tough to know who's going to go at the four, but probably, you know, Bingham or Gabe Brown, either of those guys at the four would be kind of my pick if I had to lay down a bet there. After that, you know, Arnes is going to be an emotional type leader. I think Rocket Watts could be in a really cool spot, because he's going to be playing a lot more point in the future. And I do think Foster Lawyer is going to be better this year, be someone who, like, you saw he gained 20 pounds or whatever of muscle. That's good. He's going to need that. He's going to need to turn himself into physically, like, have the body of Tum Tum Nairn to be able to hang and put his body into people and stay on the court. I think Lawyer's going to do a lot of point guard work with the second unit and be able to take some minutes off of Cassius's plate, and Rocket Watts will sort of flow between the first and second units and can be sort of like a microwave scorer, right? Heats up really quick, can get you 6 points in a flash. And Kithiers is going to be a steady presence there, I think, on the second unit while earning some first team minutes as well. And this all is, of course, what's going to happen with Hauser? Is he going to get approved as well? So I think, you know, I think Bubba's going to do really well. Gabe Brown's going to do well and find some production with the second unit, and could be another guy who, if his perimeter defense is coming around and he's sort of showing, developing on the promise that he's shown, we'll say it that way. Like, the athleticism's coming around. He's a big kid. He's really long. And if he sort of can get to that level where he can really defend 3 through 5, 2 through 4, whatever, at the college level, I think he could be someone who is absolutely a stalwart for the second unit, if Bingham is taking that step to be the first unit guy that I think he kind of should be at this point next season. I think when it's all said and done, to sort of roundabout way answer this, I think the steadiest presence of the second unit and someone that's going to be a little bit relied upon to calm things down and steer Michigan State through times when Cassius is off the court is Foster Lawyer. And I don't think he's going to be filling it up at all. I think he'll hit some shots, he'll make some plays, and he'll be much more comfortable on the court. And I think he's going to grow a lot. I think this will be his biggest leap from freshman year to sophomore year. I think he just starts turning into a steadying presence. Not someone who's going to be a game changer, but like a leader of the second unit, someone who's going to facilitate for whatever guys are with him, for Rocket Watts, for Gabe Brown when he's in that role, you know, get the ball with Kithier down low, run some stuff with Bingham. And I think he'll do a good job, be calm, make good passes, hit the occasional three. When he gets to the line, he'll hit his free throws. And I think he'll just be more experienced, more seasoned, a better leader, more confident, and will be a really, because out of all these guys, like, the only one we know will never scratch the first unit unless something happens is Lawyer. Like, he's never going to start unless Cassius Winston is out. So I think he could do really well to sort of be that captain of the second unit and eat 10 minutes or so, 8 to 10 minutes, and do a good, solid job of being a leader, making plays, setting up the offense, and hitting the occasional shot. So that's my sort of thing there. I know it's not sexy. I think Rocket Watts is kind of the sexy name to be able to fill it up and provide some explosive scoring in that second unit. And I do think he does that. But I think the leadership, the leader of that second unit is Foster Lawyer. And I think he will do a better job there this season. All right. Got a couple more here. Upper Deck Jerk Guy, of course, gets in here. Are we going to see 2000 throwback units this year? That would be awesome. Who will be missed more, Cueto or Kenny G? Matt McQuaid, perimeter defense, although Aaron Henry looks like he's going to be stepping into that role just fine. I think they'll miss both those guys, but they have more than enough to replace their skill sets and then some. And who is less annoying to you, Matt Heppner or Matt Sheehan? I feel like you've asked that before. And any question that has to do with annoyance and the two Matts, every single time Sheehan is going to be more annoying than Heppner by a million. Like a million fold. I don't even know, by an infinite exponential thing. And Matt Sheehan knows that. He would admit that. Heppner's a good guy, not annoying really in any way. And smart and knows the sports and it's just good conversation. Sheehan is just like, my God, is he unbearable? I don't even know why I have him on this show every single week. So yeah, 100,000,000% Sheehan annoys me way more than Heppner. All right, that's going to do it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening to Locked On Spartans. Tomorrow, full hockey preview. There's some interesting things with this hockey team. They're looking like maybe they can really start getting things rolling. And I know it's been a tough decade or so for the hockey team. I think they've made it to one tournament, maybe. I don't even remember. Or maybe they won the Big Ten like 7 years ago. It's been a rough stretch. And I think, you know, after some tough goes of it, they've got some guys that look like, you know, this is a year that they could take a step forward. So we'll have Nathaniel Bott on as well, other guests to talk about. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Jerbear on Twitter, at JD_Jerbear. I don't know his full name yet. I've yet to really meet him. He'll be on as well, but I know he knows his hockey and has a hockey background as well. So looking forward to talking to those guys. And I think it'll be a good show. It's a little, you know, a little change of pace. Talk about a different sport that, you know, we will definitely care about. If Michigan State hockey gets things going, I know the campus, the fans will really be locked in and really caring about them and following results. So dedicate a little bit of time to the hockey team here as they just got their season going last weekend. So we'll do that tomorrow, and then we'll do something else to finish off the week. So thanks so much for listening to today's Locked On Spartans. Back tomorrow. Reminder to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. We will catch up with you tomorrow morning.